Hello and welcome to our latest Charity Digital podcast, and a big warm welcome to all of you who have joined us today. My name is Liz from Charity Digital, and it's a pleasure for me to be hosting the discussions we are going to be having about the wonderful world of IT, or rather the brave new world of post-COVID IT. Remote working, online fundraising, digital service delivery, all the measures we put in place to deal with the problems of the pandemic have had an impact on where we stand coming out of it now. So I would say it's never been more important in this day and age to stay in control of IT. And also we could arguably say it has never been more difficult. Cyber threats are increasing, with criminals exploiting the vulnerabilities caused by moving our work online and to the cloud. Did you know the annual cost of cybercrime is expected to hit $6 trillion this year, and charities are particularly at risk due to lack of cybersecurity resources and the wealth of data at their disposal? Yet this is just one challenge, albeit a huge one, facing IT charities and IT services in charities. We also have other major IT concerns for the charity sector, such as managing online events, keeping data safe, and employee retention and recruitment. The conversations we are going to be having in a minute will discuss prevalent questions that we have regarding this and the issues we are facing. On that note, one little issue that we might face this afternoon could be the Wi-Fi. So I do apologise beforehand if we do have poor sound quality problems or any background noises, as inevitably it does happen, so please bear with us. So let's get cracking. I'm going to introduce our guests, and a very warm welcome to Mike Carruthers, Head of IT at Fusion Lifestyle, and to Philip Anthony, Founder and Managing Director of Coopsies. It's so good to have you both join us. So why don't we just start off? Could you give us a very brief background of yourselves, and then I'll kick off with some questions. Mike, do you want to take the lead?
Okay, yes. Hello, Liz. Hi, Phil. I'm Mike Carruthers. I'm an independent IT consultant with Auburn Systems. I'm supporting a number of clients, mainly in the not-for-profit sector, with projects in applications, web migration, GDPR, data management, that kind of thing. Prior to that, I was head of IT at Fusion Lifestyle, which is a charity, and I had responsibility for all their IT services across their suite of about 90 leisure centres. So that's a positive.
That's you. That's perfect. Thank you. I just realised I might have pronounced your surname a bit wrong. Sorry about that, Mike. Moving over to Phil.
Oh, hello, everyone. So I'm Philip Anthony. I'm founder and MD of Coopsies. And I've been doing IT for charities now, man and boy, some 25 years plus. An interesting thing is I could have sat here 25 years ago and smugly said, I can tell you everything there is to know about IT and stripped a PC down and done everything. But the river's gone broader and deeper simultaneously. So now I spend a lot of my time trying to manage and interpret all the issues that are happening simultaneously, whilst providing a decent service to the hundreds of charities that we work with day to day.
Well, fantastic. This discussion is certainly in very good hands. So if I just start off with maybe posing a question, okay, where does IT stand post-COVID now? Certainly the responses to COVID has speeded up the adoption of new technologies. So if we're going to be looking at outlining the IT issues experienced during COVID-19, could you share sort of what changes you've noticed in the world of IT over the past year? How have job roles changed?
I think first and most obviously, everybody is working remotely, or at least a vast majority of people are working remotely. And I don't think we can see any sign of that changing anytime soon. I think the statistics show that something like 60% of people want to retain at least some proportion of their working week working from home. And obviously that imposes some significant challenges for IT organizations, particularly with regard to security and the types of devices that people use when they're working from home. That's obviously been a challenge. It was a challenge before the pandemic. People were addressing bring your own device type issues. Post-pandemic, it's not so much bring your own devices, bring your own office. And while you're at it, bring the kids as well, because, you know, the family's around, people are doing things. I think IT people have got quite used to living in a fairly ordered environment with a supervised office, clear desk policy, access control on the buildings, those sorts of things. You don't have that with people working from home. So we've got to redouble our efforts, particularly with regard to security and those kinds of things.
Yeah. Phil, what are your thoughts?
It's quite interesting because what I'm going to say almost sounds like Mike and I have rehearsed this beforehand, because it's uncanny. His experiences are so similar to mine. So for me, there's been three distinct phases, really. BC, before COVID, DC, during COVID, and now, hopefully, fingers crossed, AC, after COVID. So from an IT perspective, thinking about before COVID, life was based around the office hub, as Mike said. IT was organized around that as well. Everything was joined up pretty well and protected, and all the dots were joined. So IT people, a lot of us are often on a spectrum. So that's how we like it. We don't really like surprises. So that was nice. There was some external work with terminal servers and some Office 365, but it was generally outside the purview of IT. It was separate. And then during COVID, of course, everything changed, and there was a massive scramble to get kits to people and then support them so they could actually use it. Happily, the tech proved amazingly scalable. Arguably, there was never a better time to have a pandemic because the stuff worked. It's also proved to be robust thereafter. And people generally proved to be very flexible. We all adapted because we had to. So we kind of got through that phase. And now this phase, we're sort of living this hybrid, do everything you did before. Oh, but by the way, we want you to support all these people at home and the kids, as Mike said, whilst transitioning to the cloud. And by the way, all within the same budget. So that's a real challenge across the board. It's a challenge for people internally at charities. It's a challenge for any contractors externally or IT providers like ourselves. And going back to your original thing about job role, I think for a lot of us, it's become best endeavors, because there's only so many working hours in the day. And a bit like life, from my experience, a bit like life war during wartime, you have to pick and choose which battles you're going to win. Because there's so many things happening at once and you've got finite resources.
I think to build on a couple of points that Phil's made there, I mean, one of the things that's happened, which has been a great thing to see during the pandemic, is that actually businesses have introduced new business models, put in new systems, got things up and running very flexibly, very quickly, in order to support their businesses, whether that be moving events online or whatever it might be. But they probably haven't followed all of those best practice processes that they would have done pre-pandemic. They've got things up and running. They've done things very quickly and very effectively, but they maybe haven't considered all of the security implications of the things that they've done, or maybe they haven't considered the GDPR implications of what they've implemented. So in a way, the time is right now, to some extent, to look back at the things that you've done and to say, what do we need to do? What should we be considering to make sure that those things that we've done quickly and effectively are actually secure and safe as well?
Yeah, definitely. That's really good. So it's sort of been quite challenging over these years. And would you say that businesses now have anticipated all the changes that they need to do to go into hybrid working moving forward?
No, not yet. There's a range. There's the, let's call them the enlightened, who get that all bets are off and we're in a new world and have perhaps ripped up their existing strategic plans, right down to the other end of the ostriches, let's call them, who are pretending that everything's as it was, even though half the staff aren't in the office and are crying out for kit. So there's quite a spectrum. And I think the role of IT people has changed. I think we've had to become more evangelical in encouraging the embrace of change and consideration of what's going to happen. Whereas I think beforehand we used to be more focused on the IT deliverables, and it was a pretty straightforward roadmap.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about that, Mike?
To some extent, I think, you know, a lot of the changes that we've seen are things that were to some extent predictable and already happening anyway. Yeah. You know, the digitization of some business models and services was already in process to some extent. The move to the cloud was a natural progression that was happening at, you know, before. I think what was very difficult to predict was the pace at which things would have to happen and the pace at which things changed. And I don't think that's going to slow down particularly. You know, although we're now through the worst of the pandemic, hopefully, there are still an awful lot of things to do. And technology is moving fast. Business models are moving fast. And we need to be flexible. And we need to be able to implement these things quickly and effectively in the same way that we've done over the COVID period.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. And I just like to add that. So, you know, I very much think that we're in a revolutionary era because stuff's been invented. But again, the awful things, I do compare it to wartime. You have to say, okay, we've got to use that now because it's our best shot. In the same way, say that vaccine rollout was really accelerated. We've done similar things with IT. People have just gone and done stuff. They've just had to rush and say, we have to throw everything out onto the cloud. And I think, you know, for me personally, it's certainly the biggest change in my lifetime. And going back to what Mike said, it's made what was possible, that'd be nice, to absolutely necessary. So, mm-hmm. So that's been the game changer. And just to pick up on a couple of those things, like even now, you know, Zoom calls that we're doing now, this has become the norm using Teams, Zoom. And it's absolutely essential. And we all say, it's brilliant, and we just take it for granted. But 18 months ago, we weren't doing this.
Yeah.
You know, we might have met up down in a studio at Old Street.
Yeah.
Some of these challenges also bring interesting conundrums. You know, being consistent, you talk about Teams and Zoom, you know, people have to be used to multiple different ways of working, perhaps. And maybe for a business, it makes more sense to focus on one style or one approach. I heard a story over the last few months that the early days of Zoom in the House of Commons and the House of Lords was made difficult because one of them, I think the House of Commons has Zoom and the House of Lords has Teams. And the two don't work together very well. You know, we do need to make sure that what we implement is consistent and usable and people get used to it. And there's a wide variety of people in the workforce, some of whom are very much more comfortable with these technologies than others. We do need to look and make sure that we don't end up with a two-tier workforce, those who've got technology and understand it and those who don't. So I think one of the things that we'll come across during our conversation is that training and retraining are going to become really critical to make sure that we do bring everybody up to speed with how to use these technologies quickly.
Yeah, well, definitely. I mean, we're sort of moving in now to looking at, you know, the issues that are the biggest issues that have the, you know, the impact on the IT services. And you've been just talking about this, Mike, especially with the massive problems with recruitment and retention of IT staff post-COVID. So you've mentioned sort of the new problems that will be plaguing us in the future in this new revolution, new industrial, revolution that's kind of sweeping across our nation. So, and of course, we've talked about Zoom, we've talked about Teams and moving events online and remote working infrastructure. But are there any other challenges that you can see sort of regards to security and shadow IT and taking devices home or using them at home and then moving to work? The sort of issues that we will be facing and lots of people are facing right now.
Certainly, I mean, the cyber threat situation has clearly got worse. If you know, just looking at the statistics, the numbers are appalling. And you know, people working from home with their own equipment is not the environment that we're used to from an IT perspective, and we have got to get on top of that. To some extent, I think this is a bit of a business as usual question from an IT perspective, in that we have to go back to basics. We have to go back to taking control of desktops, to taking control of PCs, making sure we understand what equipment and people are using, and what software is installed on those devices. And that was always a challenge, but it's now more so because people are operating from their home offices. So it's not a different thing to do. It's just more of it, and we've probably got to do it quickly.
And I think that actually the challenge is that some of those issues are political and cultural as much as technical. So, for example, if we think about people working from home, and everyone's using their mobile device for office email, for example. Now, to be cyber essential compliant, you might want to be able to kill email off that device should the individual lose it. But, you know, we're already seeing some organizations where, understandably, staff are very apprehensive about saying to the organization, oh, you're going to put my device into an envelope so that you can delete it remotely or aspects of it. And they feel very uncomfortable about that. But at the same time, they do want to use office email. So those are challenges that we've got to address.
And what are the implications of that, Phil?
Well, it depends on the organization. If you can't do it, well, you can't become fully compliant, and you do have a bit of a vulnerability, and then you have to, at a pragmatic level, you have to say, okay, how much of a risk is this, and can we control it perhaps through policies and make people behave better in terms of what they do with email anyway? But it's harder to seal things up in a way that you'd like to. You end up with more security vulnerabilities because they happen all over the place. You might share your laptop with your children. And that very often blows a big hole in security because they wanted to download Call of Duty or something onto your laptop. And that, you know, so bang goes your admin protection. So there's a whole range of things that keep IT managers awake at night.
How many parents haven't allowed their children to use their work laptop or whatever?
Yeah. I confess to that.
And they're remarkably good at remembering passwords as well. They do work their way through these things incredibly quickly. But there are perhaps a few simple things that we can look at as well. You know, when everyone is working in an office, you can tell whether the guy sitting next to you logging into the machine is somebody you know who works in your office. You can't do that so easily when they're logging in from home. So implementing things like multi-factor authentication on logins and things like that are quite simple things that people can do to ensure that we do check that the person is who they say they are when they log on to a device. I mentioned training and awareness of staff. I'm not sure how many people have trained staff in, you know, being aware of the cyber threats that are out there, being able to recognize phishing emails and not respond to those kinds of emails. Some of these things can be picked up by just training people properly how to look for and recognize these threats. And it might be just as much as reviewing how you back up your data as well. People spread all over the organization now using devices away from home might not be properly backing up the work that they're doing. We need to make sure that those sorts of things are picked up so that in the case of a disaster or a laptop going down, that we can recover that data or that information.
Mm-hmm. So obviously some are easier to fix than others in that respect.
Very much so, yes.
Mm. So talking about where charities should address these problems, would you sort of recommend that they sit down and really just brainstorm and plan out what they need to do?
Yeah, so that's not as daunting, I think, in the first instance, as it seems. So ourself and other reputable IT suppliers are available. I've probably got similar dashboards and checklists where you can get that on a sheet of A4. What are the key things to go through? And we've been doing a sort of traffic light system, as you know, that's pretty simple, green, yellow, red. And then you can say, okay, that's a red. We've really got to fix that. What do we need to do and work through them? So you're absolutely right, Liz. That is a very sensible approach. And then you can get a 12-month, 24-month roadmap what are the immediate things and what are the more longer-term things that need to happen. And I think also if staff are seeing that there is movement in the right direction, people become more amenable to engaging and doing the right thing and start to think about their own practices and how they work, etc.
It's not just a one-way street either, to some extent. I think as organisations start thinking about doing sort of remote working assessments and seeing whether the infrastructure for individuals to work from home is good enough to protect security, you also got to think about protecting the staff themselves. So, you know, whether that may be making reasonable adjustments for people who need to work in a home office, you know, having the right chairs, having the right desks, having the right infrastructure, those things will be important too. Because just because someone's working from home doesn't negate the responsibility of an organisation to look after its staff.
Sure.
One anecdotal funny thing that I've found is that paradoxically, the more senior people in the organisation tend to be the most helpless. Perhaps because in an office environment, they're used to having PAs do things, they're used to going into rooms where everything's set up. And so They do tend to buy in on the need to do things. We're finding because they're the people who are I can't get on Teams, etc.
Yes, that's a good point there, Phil. Very good point. So we're sort of touching on the solutions now, aren't we? And Phil, I just want to ask you, exploring unconventional IT practices. Do you have I've heard of a concept of guerrilla IT. Is that a new name for a familiar concept we've got there?
It is. It's an idea that's been going around for donkey's years. And
that just shows you that I'm really not aware of it.
Well, another name. So I was starting to think about this world where you couldn't control everything and staff need to do things. And I was thinking, you know, it's a bit like being a guerrilla cell in the 60s fighting a superpower. Say you can't, you don't have all the equipment that you need, but you can become self-reliant. And so going back to the thing about, you know, senior people again, the I can't get at my email is to me is like the modern equivalent of, sir, I've lost my pen. My pen's run out. It's just not credible. So really, everyone's going to have a plan B for everything. So I'm sure for this meeting here, Mike or myself or yourself could have perhaps used a phone as a resort to use this meeting. So we've got another device available. If we had to and we had an internet issue, we could use, say, a 5G or a 4G connection to make that work. And if we had to and Zoom was down, we could have flipped to Teams. So the concept of guerrilla IT is making people more managing from within their own resources. Because one of the challenges is IT departments face this tsunami of requests and all these weird and wonderful things that they just can't cope with. You know, we get requests on applications and stuff that we've never heard of, let alone played with yet. So sure. that's the concept. Self-reliance, always having a plan B.
Okay. Well, great. Sorry, go ahead, Mike. B. What are your actions and your like to see charities?
I really get what Phil's saying there, and I think that's again. I hate to keep saying it's this and that, but you know, that sounds to some extent like some of the shadow IT problems that we've had historically, and that in a way now that people are working from home and remotely are just as tricky. You know, individuals who have a problem and need to do something IT-wise, if they don't get quick and easy service from their IT departments, will take things into their own hands. And now there's a plethora of apps they can download of online, you know, to deal with their, you know, their CRM problem or their project management task that they've got or whatever it might be. And that's great. It fixes the problem today and it fixes it very quickly. But generally speaking, they aren't going through all of the processes that perhaps an IT department would go through in implementing those kinds of solutions. They're not considering whether the data is stored in the UK or stored in America. They're not really thinking about whether there's a proper security implementation. They're not considering all of these different tasks that normal IT departments would do as they implement these systems. So, I know when, as we come out of this COVID situation, we will find that lots of people have done exactly that, have gone out and found ways to fix problems that may or may not be the solutions that an organization would necessarily want implemented. Whether that be because of a compliance issue or a cost issue, lots of these things are cheap and free for the first 6 months, and then suddenly the costs ramp up as they start to be used in a wider context. So we have got to be careful to make sure that, as well as being flexible and quick, and I think that's one of the real challenges for IT departments, to make sure they do respond quickly to demand. As well as that, we have got to still do the day job of keeping things secure and properly implemented.
Yeah, so it's quite a thorny issue. So one of our biggest clients is, we were brainstorming the other day, and they were talking about the idea of actually removing end user support. It won't be provided. So they're saying, we're going to use Office 365. We're going to use Teams, and we're going to use a bespoke application for our data management. And those are the only tools that you can use and you can support. But in terms of connecting, it'll be a bit like all of us with our mobile phones. You use the app, you don't think you're going to get any help from Facebook. So you just have to crack on and figure it out. And sometimes stuff doesn't really work and you just move on. So a slightly different approach, because in the back of all this is that there are finite resources. And much as, say, a lot of organizations might want to put more in IT, for a lot of the people we work with, IT is another pound out of frontline services. And as we know, frontline services have never been under more pressure in a lot of places. So we're going to see that tension for quite some time, and try and have to be innovative and accept imperfect solutions, I think.
Yes, no, definitely. Well, that's given us some ideas anyway, how to prepare more adequately for those changes and that we are experiencing. I'm just going to sort of wrap up in the next couple of minutes and just ask you one last question. Are you optimistic about the future of IT and charities? Now, be honest here. What about you, Mike?
I'm certainly optimistic. I think that what's been shown in the last few months is that people can do amazing things.
Yes, they can.
If we can get sort of Granny to do Christmas Day on Zoom, we can do anything. We can train people to do whatever. So actually what it's shown is that we are remarkably resilient. We have got skilled workers who are flexible, who are capable of learning to use new techniques and approaches. From an IT perspective, it's a great place to be. Very optimistic.
What about you, Phil?
Overall, I'm very optimistic because I think when you get these schisms, that's when societies and humanity, we move forward and make the world a better place. I think we'll be more aware of, what they call black swan events, the roulette ball landing on zero. It happens. And I think we've forgotten about that. And having those what if conversations, what if the next cure, COVID was uncurable? But more than likely, it's all going to be okay. But having said that, I think some organizations that do not adapt might fall by the wayside. And one of the things I've noticed over the last few years with charities, it's become quite competitive for funding, etc. And the charities that are organized and flexible, they're the ones that win the bids and get the new work, etc. So overall, it'll be good. But some organizations, if they don't adapt, they might struggle.
Yeah. Well, that's something really to think about, and we can take home right now. I'm going to wrap up, and thank you so much for that really great discussion. We could have gone on for such a long time, couldn't we? It's quite fascinating, actually, just looking at where we've come from and what we're doing now and what we have to do to obviously get over the last hurdle, I think it is. Thank you so much to our listeners, and I hope you found that the ideas and experiences shared to be insightful and helpful, and some really good valuable takeaways to keep hold of. Thank you to our guests. Thank you so much, Mike and Phil, for your time today. We will post this podcast on our website. and also the resources to the discussion in the resource section. So you can go and check these out very soon. Also, it would be fantastic if you could subscribe to the podcast, whichever provider you're using to listen to today, and give us your rating, as this gives us an understanding of what you like and also helps other people find us. So once more, thank you, Mike. Thank you, Phil. It's been fantastic. Thank you to our listeners. We hope that you will join us again very soon, either for a webinar or a podcast. Have a lovely afternoon, everyone. And it's a goodbye from me and a goodbye from our guests too.